You're listening to the Setup Podcast, a podcast that helps you navigate new topics in music, tech, and entrepreneurship, with the most disruptive professionals in the music industry turning their experiences working behind the scenes into actionable advice you can use. I'm Sydney.
And I'm Sam.
And we're your hosts for the Setup Podcast.
If you're like us, passionate about paving your own path, hit the subscribe button on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite app, because we'll help set you up for success at the Setup Podcast.
I want to say a quick shout out to our amazing listeners. Truly, I created this podcast to help those who are new to the industry, just like I was once. And I'm very happy to learn that I can also provide insight to those who have been in music for a while. I want to give another shout out to all of our new listeners of the Setup Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
In case you missed last week, we learned how Alex Hallerman supported Gavin's release of Crazy and facilitated both publishing and record deals. Who do we have this week, Sydney?
We have Micah Bickham. He is a live performance director handling the creative content development production of original content at Vivo. He's directed and worked with Ariana Grande, The Weeknd, Justin Bieber, Billie Eilish, Halsey, and many more. Okay, Micah started his career as a tape duplicator for Joel Osteen. In 2008, he created a production company focused on live performances captured in a cinematic way. Today, we discuss how Micah creates the official live performance music videos under Vivo for Ariana Grande, driving greater support for her music.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Bandzoogle. With Bandzoogle, you can make a beautiful website easily and add an email signup form to grow your fan email list. Start your free trial at the link in our episode notes.
Hey, hey.
How's it going?
Hello.
Thank you guys again for being flexible.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm at the house today, if that's cool. So a less pro background. You get to see a real New York City apartment.
Yes, thanks for joining us. So, I mean, of course, we have to start off with how you got started. So if you can give us a peek into your journey into video production, that'd be great.
Yeah, well, I've said this before to someone else, but, I only ever wanted to play music. I didn't come from a conventional filmmaker's background. I think it's really colored my career in a very interesting way. You know, I'm born and raised in Texas. I live in Brooklyn and have with my family for a while. When you come from a town that's like outside the conventional sort of entertainment market, the path to the thing that I do now is very, very like nuanced, and it's, you know, kind of, it kind of ebbed and flowed throughout my 20s. And, you know, so I grew up playing music and wanting to be a musician, and my parents are musicians and artists. I really thought that that's what I would do with my life. And, the thing that's so beautiful about that pursuit is that I think music is kind of it's the conduit to like a lot of different types of creativity, if that makes sense. So, you know, when you're starting out, you're playing in bands, and then you're doing a little bit of travel, and you have to do your own sort of your own PR and your own marketing. And, you know, we just found ourselves very quickly, having to be photographers and having to design posters and you're in this sort of space of sort of mixed media where you're doing all of these different things. And, it was right about the time essentially where, the 5D Mark II came out, which is like, I don't know what that was, like early 2000s. Right. And lo and behold, now a tool has come out where, you can use that for photography, and then you can, it's got a full frame Super 35 or full frame sensor that you can put old 35 lenses on. And all of a sudden now you've got a really great camera tool. It's got a pretty good image in it, you know, and now all of a sudden you have this thing. And all of my creative friends who are in that same space, they're collecting, they need these tools. And you just, when the, you know, when you, the smoke clears, all of a sudden now you find yourself, oh, we're filming bands performing live. And it all just starts, yeah. you know, it, like right. any other story you've probably heard a million times. It just starts from an organic place of just like curiosity and wanting to be creative and not really kind of pursuing this. At least my experience, I wasn't pursuing this to like it to be a full-time career. You know, I grew up in a place and a time where like that was a bit of a fantasy, if mm-hmm. that makes sense, you know, that sort of beget, you know, starting to build a little, you know, Houston based production company. And, you know, that production company started out shooting bands that were coming through town. And then, there were some branded partnerships, you know, early, just very like regional branded partnerships that kind of yeah. came into play. I mean, I tell like people that are trying to get into the business all the time, man, if you're like getting into this to be like assigned DP, or you're getting into this to like go shoot commercials and you don't have just like an intrinsic curiosity about mm-hmm. the process, it's 50-50 whether or not you're going to make it. You know what I mean? Like you really do have to have like a very, and I just, because of my interest in music, I had just a pure like passion and interest in just like being in the process of music, whether that was like performing, shooting, designing, being a filmmaker. It was all kind of, for me, it was all sort of wrapped up in the all in one, you know? So that's kind of like early. And I'm like, that's broad strokes for me, but you know, effectively I'll skip ahead. And essentially I took a job with a guy named Joel Osteen, if you know that name. He's a big sort of TV evangelist from Houston. And I had no production background, zero, like outside of just like what I just described, which is it was very scrappy and run and gun. And they were looking for someone who had an editing background, which I did not, and someone that had a television background, which I did not. And I was really just wanting to pursue music, but I just needed some sort of stable full-time thing. And I lied through my teeth and said I could do all of those things because, you know, I knew in myself that it was something that I was interested in. There was a musicality to what they were asking for. And I just knew that I knew myself well enough that I could just figure it out. Right. So I just would spend those early days just Googling how to do stuff. I mean, I learned how to tape to tape linear edit on like a Digibeta cam, which you're not even know what that is, but it's like very nuanced TV editing. I learned how to become a technical director in a live application. So I was a technical director for many years for another director. And it's just all these things that I'm collecting that I don't realize back then, but I know now. It was just me putting in my 10,000 hours of sort of, you know, understanding what is live production, what is multi-camera performance, what are all of these things, and you can't put language to that then, but I can put language to it now, you know. And it was just very. It was just, again, it was more like honest curiosity, but it just kind of that next sort of iteration of my background. And I hate, you know, I like, it was very TV, very proper TV. And so here I am as, you know, this person who loves and enjoys, appreciates music and music videos and cinema and filmmaking, but I'm also gaining all of this television background and knowledge. And it's those two things that I can pinpoint and say, that the collision of those two things is what's influenced and continues to influence where my career is headed up until now, for sure. So that's kind of like early background. And, you know, I can, long story short, I, through a production company that I had with other partners, we had got hired for a series of performances for a production company here in New York called Pulse Films. And Pulse had a client called Vivo. And they were doing a series of live performances for Vivo. And, you know, my buddy Ryan, who was coming in to direct, I was really kind of coming into TV and sort of like co-direct where needed. And I met the team, hit it off. They were looking for someone to run live production for them at the time, just run creative for live production. And yeah, that's where the story began for me as far as Vivo is concerned.
I love that. And it, you know, if someone were to look at your background and be like, these are very different things, but you know, there's so many correlating factors that in some instances, like whenever someone asks me in particular, like, how did you get where you're at now? And some people are like, oh, I just fell into it. And it's like, well, it kind of seems that way, but also there's some things that kind of translate. And that's so cool that you had that background in music that now it's coming full circle. So tell us, like, what does your day-to-day look like? And that's probably very hard to answer, but kind of give us a little peek into like what it means to work in live production at Vivo.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, at Vivo, so I'm the executive producer of content production, which is a very broad bucket term, you know, so it means something very different depending on where you're at. For Vivo, as the exec producer for what's called content production, which is a team that sits within the org, the company, my job is really to nurture and develop creative ideas in the original content space, to foster the and develop those ideas with my team. You know, so I have a team of producers who develop creative ideas for different artists, or to foster those ideas for projects that I'm responsible for. And you know, it's my intrinsic job to make sure that the thing that we said we were going to do is the thing that we deliver, right? And a lot of times that feels like you know, it feels like you can be, you're running through a gauntlet of people throwing rocks while you're holding, you know, like a piece of porcelain, plate or something, you know, and you're just literally trying to make sure that it doesn't get disrupted. And sometimes that's a time thing or a money thing or an ambition thing. There's all kinds of ways a project can pivot, but we're trying to sort of preserve somewhat of the authenticity of the original concept and idea, right? As far as our team is concerned, we're very like small and somewhat insulated team inside a bigger organization. And we operate in a very unique way compared to other platforms, which are other partners or other DSPs or whatever you want to call it. In that we really operate a bit like the agency and a bit like a production company would. So, you know, there might be other partners who you would go to and an artist does some sort of thing with, and that partner might cut a check to a production company that's going to develop and foster the idea. They're going to hire a director. They're going to book a location, and they're going to do that on behalf of the company. And when it's all said and done, you know, the company will put their logo on it, and that'll be that. Whereas what my job is, and what the way that our team operates is that we are the first conversation with an artist when marketing or promo needs arise, right? So we are there to foster and develop the early idea, to refine that idea and pitch it to the artist. Once that idea is approved, we're there to expand upon that, give that granular detail. And then we operate, you know, those are things an agency would do essentially. And then we operate as a production company, in that my team is a team of directors. So we don't farm out the directing work to other people. I've hired directors. I'm a director myself. And so we build the models and we create the content from within. And that just allows us, if anything else, it allows us to be really flexible with an artist and an artist team, with a label. We grow really deep roots with our label partners, you know, so I see, you know, the same digital marketing teams come through, and they know me, they know the quality of my work, they know my producers and the quality of their work. They know that we're, you know, Vivo, we create in a very specific way, and we create that way, you know, alternatively, in order to be able to protect and preserve, you know, the integrity of the content. You know, so when you hold up, whether it's franchise content or artist promo, when you hold it all up together, I like to think, and I think people agree with this, I like to think that it has a very specific vibe to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it stands for something that feels like it's got Vivo's thumbprints on it. And that's kind of the ultimate goal for sure.
For me in particular, and I know a lot of viewers, like when I go to YouTube, I'm looking for the Vivo official video over anything that's else, right? Because I know that it's credible and that it's legitimate and that it's of high quality.
And always entertaining.
Yeah, and always entertaining.
Most importantly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think if, you know, Vivo stands for excellence with regards to, you know, it's premium video content that lives you know, and oftentimes it lives in a sea of user generated content. And so, you know, Vevo is premium music videos, and what we do within original content is we come alongside artists who are there to promote whatever they're in cycle for, you know, so whatever that new single is, that new album, the tour, whatever the, like, whatever that promotional vehicle need is, you know, we create content that really sort of helps drive, you know, drives audiences, it drives, you know, it drives chart placement, it drives all kinds of things for that artist within that space. And so, you know, we need our content to be as skillful, as quality, as excellent as the music video that they made, right? We need like my original live performances for whoever we're working with need to sit hand in glove with whatever their teams have already made. And I like to think that we do that really well. Mm-hmm.
Recently, you've worked with, you know, The Weeknd, Ariana Grande. Are you typically working with artists at that level, or do you also work with artists outside of labels?
Well, it's a good question. So, you know, we're typically only, you know, we only work with artists and serve the kind of the promotional value and need of artists, you know, who work with the, you know, who are underneath the label partners that we work with. Right. So, and the way that our content is shaped, it's very straightforward in how we have essentially sort of tentpole or franchise content. You know, so, you mentioned The Weeknd or Ariana Grande. We have a franchise called Official Live Performances, which are their tier A, almost, you know, white paper creative, performances that are, nuanced, and they are custom made for whatever the artist's creativity might be, or whatever thing we want to help foster into that artist campaign, right? So that's Official Live Performances. We work with mid-tier artists who are kind of on that sort of rising, you know, breaking point. You know, the artists who are, you've known about, but they're on that sort of trajectory of superstardom, right? So you know, the Olivia Rodrigo's, the Giveons of the world, these kinds of artists. You know, we have a franchise called Lift, which is, you know, it offers, again, it's performance content, but there's all kinds of things. There's all kinds of things that are of added value to an artist within that campaign. Right. So, you know, promotion around music videos, optimal placement, some of these other things. We have a franchise called Footnotes that we do, as part of that campaign as well. So that's Lift for mid-tier artists. And then we have a franchise called Discover, which is just, it's emerging artists that we think people need to know about, and we think are fixing to hit kind of like mass appeal, right? So, you know, Discover is our opportunity to create performance content for artists who are at that scale. So that's kind of like, that's franchise content for us at a glance. We do other sort of bespoke custom things. We do branded content here and there as well. But that's kind of how our slate of franchise content lines itself out, if that makes sense. And then we do all kinds of different artist promo stuff that we can talk about as well. But that is kind of the delineation and the difference of the things that we make. So it's a roundabout way to say, you know, we're servicing the needs of artists that kind of sit within the ecosphere, primarily artists who sit within the ecospheres of, you know, Sony and Universal artists primarily.
Just thinking about the actual production and pre-production and the strategy, or, you know, how many weeks it takes. Is it similar amongst all this different tiers, the way you guys operate as a team to service a certain artist, or is it different depending on the tier?
It's a good question. It's really, you know, it is a little different between each tier. I think it's much more different really depending on, you know, the artists that we're engaging with at the time, right? Because there's a lot of times we're racing to create and develop assets for an artist campaign that has a defined launch date, right? You know, so we're 4 weeks away from the album going out, you know, day and date, and we have to have content that rolls out in and around that for optimization of whatever that conversation looked like, right? There are other times when we do things with, we produce content with artists And their album is already out, right? And so that timeline is defined in a different way, right? Because we may now be, we may be up against the artist who's fixing to start their tour. And so we're trying to kind of pinpoint dates that kind of reflect their availability. You know, every conversation we set out with, as far as sort of Lyft and official live performances, every conversation begins in some capacity with, we would like 6 to 8 weeks for development. But it really kind of comes down to what the artist avails are and what we need to do. I mean, if you're asking my team, we've worked against some of the most rigid schedules in terms of like, yeah, we've got to be loading in 3 weeks and we're just starting. Right. Other times it's like, no, yeah, like we're looking to launch something early fall. So we've got some healthy time to really foster and develop creativity. And neither one of those is right. What I typically find is that we often rise to the occasion in much more efficient ways when time is tight than if we aren't doing something till September. You know, it's just like human nature. You have that, you don't get in a hurry.
Right.
So I think it always evens out in the wash, but it really kind of comes down to like, how long is it? And some of those things have to be defined by like, you know, if we're shooting in LA, how long it's going to take to get the permit for that location that we're trying to shoot in. Right. There are some hard things that you just can't move around, but for the most part, it's always a bit of a shifting world of trying to take 100 different sort of puzzle pieces and make them fit in some kind of tangible way.
That is so optimistic. You're performing by pressure, not performing by procrastination, but just kidding.
Correct. But it is true. It's like, and I think this is a very interesting sort of way to look at it is that people think, I think when you're, and this, I think this is really true about like any sort of creative output. People think they want a white piece of paper with no parameters, right? They want to create, they want to be able to create something with no limitation. And I just, the more I do this, I find that is not true, right?
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
The limitations are what force decisions, you know, and it forces you to kind of play in a very defined sandbox, you know. And if you've got no limitations, I typically find that you make less meaningful creative decisions than if I know for a fact I have to shoot this thing in Atlanta, right? If I know this has to happen in Los Angeles, then I'm going to make decisions that are different than if this, I know this has to happen in New York or if it has to happen wherever. It's like, I think some of that we need pressure in some ways. We need, if this happens, it has to happen in 3 weeks. It's not going to be fun, but it is going to make everyone kind of sit up a little straighter. And I think that usually becomes the fire that breeds some layer of creativity that you might not have got otherwise.
I mean, what's that saying? Diamonds are created under pressure, right? So,
yeah.
So that's how you make works of art there. And I agree wholeheartedly. I have this one client that literally cannot tell us the direction that they'd like whenever we talk in with design elements. And so it literally just wastes more time whenever we send over something and they say, no, it's not what I want, but they can't tell us what they may want. And it's always a nightmare. But so I think I totally understand what you're coming from there in a different respect. So let's talk about some of the projects in particular. So three that we really liked was with Ariana Grande, three of the official live performances. And so we'd like to know, how did that happen? What was behind the creative direction there?
It's interesting. Oh yeah, that was a great great project. Very different in some ways than other projects. In a really good way. That's a lot of times when we meet with artists, the first conversation is not about being creative. It's not the creative intent. It's trying to understand, what is this album trying to say, right? What's the subtext behind these records on this album? What are the kind of the visual tent poles that, that are the, kind of the underpinning of mm-hmm. this project. And in other words, getting back to what we were just talking about, it's us trying to self impose those parameters, right? What are the things, right? What are the things we need to kind of maybe touch on? And in the case of Ariana, you know, their team didn't want to have that conversation, due in part because she was very specific that she wanted us to come to the table with a concept, which is really like trusting, and it was a very beautiful like way to approach it, because now all of a sudden it's not me trying to understand or get into her creative world. Mm-hmm. It's her saying, no, like, I want to see the creative world that you guys come up with. And then I'll let you know if I'm not into it or if I am into it, you know, which is, you know, we get that at times, and, you know, we have to be prepared for like ultimate levels of collaboration. And, you know, we have to be prepared, like if an artist wants us to come to the table with a strong concept, to do that too. And, you know, so the long and short is, that was a project that I was overseeing. So I developed the creative there. And you know, that creative came out of nothing more than just me, you know, me looking through, you know, an endless amount of kind of references and things that, and we can talk about what that process looks like later, but like me pulling just, you know, a bunch of different references that kind of, that spoke to how I felt when I listened to that album, you know, some of the color tones and some of the things we saw that were kind of like, through lines and, you know, the outfits that she was wearing, you know, in some of the photography and just kind of how the record made us feel. It was just very like, you know, the album has just such a, you know, just such a like beautiful presence. And there's a hardness and a softness to it. And so it's really like, how did we, you know, the creativity was like, how do we create this very lush, beautiful, iconic space? But there's this sort of looming icon that's almost sort of like grounding the whole performance. And like, what does that look like? And, you know, so we built a deck together. We built like a 50-page deck, and it had everything, you know. It had like, here are the values of, and here are the reasons that this space, you know. You know, we pulled all kinds of references from, you know, runway influence, to sort of art installation, bunch of theater references. And it's just saying like, these are the things we think that matter. Here's a visual identity we haven't seen you play inside of before. We knew we had to capture 6 songs. And so we knew that what we had to create was more of a stage, you know, a presentational stage that was, you know, that might've been a bit more binary and more, you know, considered in terms of like a performance environment. And yeah, I mean, Ariana turned up on the pitch call and I took her through the deck and said, this is what I think matters. This is what I think the value is. And she, you know, she loved it. She had some opinions. We changed some of the development. You know, the icon was originally a giant rectangle, and she loved the idea of it being this giant oval. Like it had a softer presence. And that was like a really great perspective, you know? Yeah. So it was just like that level of, once we had the sort of initial, developments, and I could show you guys the early references, you know, that I take into Photoshop and then I cut and chop and make the early Photoshopped, here are the references, and I pull and I make the thing, aren't too dissimilar from what we actually ended up making. And so, yeah, I mean, from there, it's just yes anding the process. You know, I love, she loves this. Let's do this differently. Let's pull this in here and let's make this thing. And, you know, it was important to me that we build on scale, because like, you know, I think, anyone can bring like a video surface, or they can, you know, like use these different tools that, you might see in an award show, or, you know, we wanted to create something that felt like theater, something that felt practical and tangible. But we knew it had to be large. And so, you know, we had to build on, you know, we had to build on scales, and it wasn't an easy project at all. But, you know, the result of that is like just getting Ariana to like live in that space and own that space in such an iconic and beautiful way. And I think the project kind of speaks for itself.
It really does. And I am such a sucker for lighting too, like intentional yes. lighting. And so that's one of the elements that really caught my eye.
Mm, that's cool. Yeah. No, I hadn't, you know, I mean, I there's nothing is ever new. I mean, you know how it goes, like when it comes to creativity, it's less about trying to invent a new color. And it's more about like trying to blend this color and this color and this color and this color to have the end result be this thing you've never seen. And so I think that's usually my approach, is like really taking and looking for influence in other ways, you know, in other places that people aren't looking for influence. And, you know, I'm very inspired by, you know, I don't go to tons and tons of theater, but I'm really inspired by, you know, scenic design within the theatrical space. I'm really inspired by, you know, people's installation work, you know, and just kind of subtle expressions that don't typically have a place in music. And I like to try and pull some of that reference and influence into musical performance. I think it becomes way more interesting in that way.
Absolutely. And so once your team, all the teams, I should probably say, and Ariana as well, once you guys confirmed what the content, the production is going to look like, and honestly, still the strategy behind that, what was the timeline looking like between pre-production, production, and then so forth?
Well, that particular project was roughly 4 weeks from pitch to shoot. Yeah. So that was I would classify that one as one of the ones that was, you know, it was tighter on the front end, in terms of, you know, I think if we had more time, the environment might have been something different, you know what I mean? Yeah. But
you know, guessing yourself.
That's right. You shape the, you know, we knew we had to do this in a soundstage. We knew we had some of the things you just start to know because you don't have the time to, you don't have the luxury to go do a week's worth of location scouting, you know, because if you think about it, like, and we even talked about that a lot. It's like that same set and space, placed in the middle of a field has a different intention to it. You know, absolutely. That same place and space placed on in a desert has a different intention, in a soundstage, a different intention. And so, you know, again, you work within the parameters, but it was 4 weeks from pitch to pretty much being on set.
How much of that 4 weeks were allocated to pre-production task, and what are some of the priorities they have to take care of before production and shoot days?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, right away, once we knew that some of this was confirmed, one of the biggest things, which is going to be the strangest thing to say, but I had pitched this sort of overgrown flower field. Well, like the first thing we had to do is we had to buy sod, and we needed that sod to grow, and we needed many weeks for it to grow and get overgrown. And so quite literally, within week one, we're buying grass sod in Los Angeles, and they have places that do this, and they lay it out in the sun, and there's a guy who waters it every day for 4 weeks, you know, before it turns up on the truck. And so that was one of the, we knew that was one of the biggest time sensitive things, because it had to be real grass. It couldn't feel like, you know, it couldn't look like a putting green. It had to feel like worn, and it had to have that quality to it. So that was one of the very first tasks. Those little things like that. The icon that we created was built in Chicago by upstaging. So we knew that it had to go into production within such amount of time, because then it had to be shipped to LA in order to make our deadline. So you start to kind of understand, all right, what did we sell, and how do we prioritize the tasks that need to happen first, second, third, fourth, et cetera. You know, we immediately send, you know, I immediately go get on a plane and go to LA, and I start looking for stages, because I know that based on the thing we are creating, we can't be in an environment that has ceilings less than 36 feet, for example. Mm-hmm. So we see all of the spaces that have, or we, you know, we reach out to all the spaces that have 36 feet tall ceilings and higher, right? So all of that stuff just starts to kind of, you know, we from Vivo's perspective, we, every time a project gets confirmed, which is part of our process, we do a kickoff, an internal kickoff, and that's with comms, design, digital marketing, my team, production. And we sit down and we go through the deck so that everyone internally knows exactly where we're headed. You know, comms can reach out to partners who may be interested. Design can begin the initial process of, you know, creating in-content assets and teasers and getting photography on board. Everyone walks away from that kickoff with their sort of action items. And then we're in sort of real-time project check-ins every day, right? So that will look like, you know, I take my team through a 10 a.m. regroup every morning, right? So we look at every project, and even right now, we're in the middle of a bunch of projects that are in various stages of production. And we meet every morning and we go through the tasks of that day. And then the next day, we get back together. What was the result of those tasks? What needs to hit today's sort of list? Because if you don't do that, you know, like everyone goes in a million different directions. We need to always kind of center ourselves, make sure that we're only working towards today's tasks. And, you know, the net result over 4 weeks is that you get it all done. But if you don't look at it as that sort of linear progression, it can become like a, you know, chaotic, sort of stressful mess.
Absolutely.
Does that answer that question?
Yeah. And it's kind of wild that you're picking out these ideas and then picking the places afterward. In general, these ideas probably always exist, but then you have to actually find them, like find the spaces, find the right, you know, prop. I don't know why that was surprising to me, but maybe it's just a different like mindset, like get it out, get it, you know, approved, everyone confirm, and then go and like take time to actually find that space. And so through your experience and from working with many different artists, from your perspective, what do you think the main purpose of your team and the main purpose of, if you have another official video, it's still going with Vivo to create, you know, more content. What do you think, like what drives you and your team and the purpose for that?
I mean, I think, you know, the thing that drives our team within the things that we create. I mean, I think we talk about it all the time, but we look at the things we make. I mean, I know, I'm smart enough to know that what we create within original content, it's promotional opportunities that service a very specific need for our label partners, for our artists. I get that, right? But we're looking at everything we're making with a very strategic and artistic eye, right? These aren't peanut butter commercials, right? We're not selling you a car. We're quite literally creating these things. You know, we're putting these artistic expressions that these people they've nurtured these songs in such a powerful and important way. We're putting these things out into the world. And so like, we need to do that with a level of like thoughtfulness and care, you know, and we need to like be really honest with like the opportunity that we have. Like it is a lot of trust, you know? And I think that's kind of been the central sort of focus for our team. And it's the thing that kind of keeps us, it's the thing, in other words, that when things are incredibly tight, I said it this morning, we had a team meeting this morning, which is, you know, things can be really stressful and people can kind of like feel like, you know, so can need to be reminded, in other words, that like we're doing this for like a really important way. And I do this, it's how I feel about music. You know, when new albums come out, like I digest them in such a like an emotional way. And so like I look at this Ariana piece, the Weeknd piece, and I recognize that we're being invited into being a partner in whatever campaign that they're involved in. And our thing needs to be as compelling and as emotive and as powerful as anything, you know? And that's, it's just a huge responsibility. So that's the thing that's kind of always there in the background and just needs to always be called out and reminded. But I mean, like, I think that's kind of like tangential to what you're saying. But I think that answers it, right? You know,
absolutely.
Like it's all kind of like just, yeah, it's all, it's very powerful. You know, the thing that we get to be a part of, you know, whether you're a music video director or you're, you know, you're a producer for an album, or, you know, you're a filmmaker within a live performance, like it's all really valuable and important art that we need to continue to make, especially now, you know?
Absolutely. Different perspective, different emotions, even, that might drive different audiences maybe.
Yeah. And we even, like, you know, I said it before, but we create a lot of, you know, we have a studio in Dumbo, and we have artists who are in all the time. You know, we shoot 3-4 days every week. And other partners, they might in fact have an artist in and you know, put them in front of a white paper psych or do something that, you know, has a very like short lived shelf life. Whereas we're trying to create these things that are going to service a very important promotional need for artists who have 2 hours to give us on a Wednesday, but we're creating it with the hope that like 2 years from now, people are going to still find that content. They're still going to value that content, you know? And so even the things that are short form promotion, small budget, you know, again, artist has an hour to come in and then they're out the door. We still want those things to be great because that stuff still has to live next to the premium content that we service for those labels. And so it all has to be, no one's going to look at that and be like, oh, I guess, well, they didn't have as much time to spend with that artist, or they must've been short on resources for that day. It all has to still feel really great. And so that's kind of that's the through line we bring, you know, even in our social content, even in, you know, it's all like, it's designed to be premium. It's designed to be refined in that way. And I think you see, I think you can tell.
Yeah. You took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say, you can tell. It really does show for it. And it really shows, it like tells the story of the song and the artist. It shows it, in fact, like that's the whole purpose. But so this kind of leads us into our last question that we ask every episode. So what do you want to be known for then?
That's a heavy way to end, right? Yeah, you know, I think I'll end the way that I began, which is just, you know, I only ever wanted to, you know, I wanted to perform, you know, and write songs and I think in a lot of ways, I'm not the artists themselves, you know, I want to be known for having such, care and concern for the form, you know, and for the expression that these artists bring, that, you know, no matter what it is I'm involved in, whether no matter what the project is, there is the same sort of impulse and care that the artist brought when they were being vulnerable with that lyric or creative with that performance. I want to be able to be known for that within the content that I bring and come alongside to help provide for them. You know, whatever that looks like, that would be the dream. So we'll see. That's at least my pursuit as we go.
That's so cool. And thank you for sharing that. And thank you for spending the last hour with us. It was great to hear more about what you do and how you create these beautiful things.
Amazing. Thank you guys for letting me be a part of it, for sure.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of the Setup Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please review the Setup on Apple Podcasts. And I encourage you to share this episode with your friends and colleagues. If you have any topic recommendations or questions, please visit us at www.thesetupseries.com.